And I'm for practicing some level of suffering or some discipline that makes you do something that you don't want to do every day. If you do that, you'll build this system of when things get hard, you're used to saying, okay, I'm going to just power through that.
All right, well, welcome, guys, to the Huntback Country podcast. I'm on the line with Steve. How are you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Lacking any amount of sleep. Last night was the first night. My daughter was got her first cold at 6 months old and running a fever. And, yeah, there was maybe I'm running about 2 hours of sleep at the moment. So I might be lacking a little energy.
Well, I'll try and keep you awake. So just me and you tonight, we have tried to get this one recorded a few times now. So third time's the charm. We're making it happen.
Yeah.
So before we get into the topic at hand tonight, what's up? I know you've gotten out on some bear hunts, kind of had some close calls, but fill us in on anything else that's been happening on that front.
Yeah, you know, I got the rifle all dialed in and it's shooting really, really good. I'm shooting like 3/4 inch MOA. You know, have some really tight groups out at 350 yards and
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I've been happy with that. And, was going to go Sunday, but that's when Sawyer, my daughter, started getting sick and ended up going Monday night cause I thought she was feeling better. And so I went out for an evening hunt and dang near got a bear. I mean, just one of those things where saw the bear, it was in this really brushy spot, and with a rifle, you know, if I'm going to shoot a bear, it's going to be a nice one. And, you know, I could have shot him right away, and it's one of those, you know, hindsight deals where you wish you would have done it because it turned out, you know, not what you wanted. But ended up, like, not shooting, getting the spine scope out, verifying that he was, you know, a nice bear, because obviously bears can be pretty stinking tough to decipher. You can get, you know, it's pretty easy to shoot a small one and walk up on it and go, you know, holy cow, you're a lot smaller than I thought. And anyways, one time, got spotted out, decided I was going to shoot him, and then just had my scope on him for probably 20 minutes as he was working in and out of this brush and just never once had a clear shot. And he finally disappeared around this little kind of finger ridge and ran over there and tried to spot him again and ended up just getting, like, the brush he was in is, I'm sure many guys can relate to this, like, you're looking at something and it looks like it's, like, waist-high brush. And I got over there and it's, like, 15-foot tall stuff.
Right, yeah.
Like, I mean, just, like,
you just disappear.
Yeah, it disappeared into a jungle. And I was like, okay, well, that makes sense why I can never get a clear shot at him. So, yeah, so that's been that. I've got some stuff ready for a bait. I always run a bait. Usually we put it out into May and hunt it in June. So that's kind of my backup plan if I don't get another spot stock attempt in here soon.
That's awesome. What distance was he when he was, like, in the brush and you kind of had some shot opportunities?
Right at 350 yards. Yeah. So. And I'd felt, you know, my shooting, obviously I'm a novice to shooting a rifle, but actually where I was at, it was a 5-mile mountain bike ride in there. And I had just, like, right off the road, I had taken one of my little, you know, those black targets that, you know, when you shoot it, the green pops or whatever.
Yeah, like the shoot and see thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, I had one on a cardboard box and I had randomly shot 350 yards, shot twice, put them both within like 2 inches of the bullseye. Like, okay, yeah, I'm good at that distance, you know. And so when the bear was at 350, I'm like, you know, I had that confidence, like, I've got this, you know, just give me a shot. I've got this. Just never had that opportunity to squeeze the trigger.
That's cool. So we, we'll be getting back into listeners, some of the building the backcountry rifle stuff. I know we've taken a break from that, but not only do you have an episode or two already recorded yet to be released, but we're going to be doing another Q&A. Actually I just heard from Ryan Kleckner today, and he was like, hey, have you guys gotten feedback and questions, which we have from you guys, which is awesome. But we're probably going to hop on the phone not only to hear Ryan and get into some of the questions that you guys have asked us, because honestly he's the expert and we're not, but also to give us another opportunity to kind of talk about the shooting that we've done and questions that we've had, what we found helpful, what we've struggled with along the process as we continue to kind of work with the Weatherby rifles. So if you guys have any questions, listeners, definitely shoot them our way soon, because we'll be hopping on the phone with Ryan and discussing that and releasing that in a future episode. And speaking of, so Ryan, his book, The Long Range Shooting Handbook, if you guys have listened to previous episodes, you've probably heard about the giveaway we're doing. This is the last week. If you're catching this episode as it's released, you have until the end of May to get your name in the hat for that. So we still have, I think, 4 copies left to give away. We've already given away 6 of the 10 that he gave us. So head over to exomountaingear.com/shootingbook if you're catching this before the end of May, because we're going to draw those names on June 1 and hand out the rest of those 4 books. Besides that, Steve, any updates on EXO? Anything worthwhile to share? I know that we're still just trying to like fulfill orders and make headway.
Yeah.
And it's just been crazy volume-wise.
It's just been crazy. I mean, it's been a great problem to have this year. We're just growing way faster than we anticipated, and you know, we're a really small company, and it's not like these things come in. You know, we don't get 1,000 of them at a time from China, right? Kind of made in small batches, and so we're doing our best to keep up. You know, some guys, we're kind of averaging about 4 weeks right now. Unfortunately, some guys had bad timing with, I mean, it literally could just be the small belt that they ordered that we're waiting on in that color, and there's a few weeks that are like, a few packs that are like 6-7 weeks back there. So we're doing our best. Just keep patient. I definitely get a lot of emails from guys, you know, daily, just checking in. And yeah, definitely, if you're wondering what's going on, just shoot me an email and I'll do my best to give you an answer. So
yeah.
Other than that, yeah, things are doing great. Dry bags coming along. I'll be going to production here soon. So we're hoping to be shipping that at the end of June, early July. That's kind of the date we're shooting for at the moment. And we're gearing up. It's the busy season's right around the corner. You know, our June, July, and August is kind of like the retail equivalent of Black Friday through Christmas. I mean, it just gets
like the holidays.
Flat out crazy. I know, like, when I first started SNS, I quickly learned after a couple of years that, you know, I better have my own personal stuff ready to hunt, like be ready to go hunting by June 1st, because there is no free time during those few months. It gets pretty busy.
Yeah, it's almost like guys go and Memorial Day hits and they have that long weekend, and then there's like a huge shift and then just a huge uptick in not only guys getting ready for the season, but, you know, picking up gear and everything else for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Right after Memorial Day, and then literally July 5th, usually, like the second people return from 4th of July vacation, it's flips a switch and it gets crazy.
Yeah. One thing just to mention too, I don't know that we've mentioned this on the podcast, and we really haven't, promoted this much, but it's something that we've always done with EXO. Is any of you guys in the military, whether you're active duty or retired, we do offer a discount, and we posted that on social recently and have had great feedback from that. But just wanted to let you podcast listeners know as well, if you're in the market, if you're considering EXO, or if you're an EXO owner, want to pick up some accessories, anything like that, just go ahead and shoot us your proof of service. You know, you can shoot it to me directly, mark@exomountgear.com, and we'll get you guys set up with a personal discount code just to say thank you for serving. So just wanted to make that known to the podcast audience, because again, I don't think we've shared that yet on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely happy to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's dive into the topic at hand tonight. So this is coming off of the previous episode that we did with Rourke Denver. If you guys haven't caught that one, it was a great interview. But something we talked about with Rourke was kind of mindset and mental toughness and all those types of things, and really pulled, you know, some of the lessons that he's learned from his experiences and kind of applied that to what can we learn, how can we improve. You know, one thing he said that stuck out to me in that interview, and we kind of already had this show planned and they just happened to relate, was he talked about kind of practicing suffering. Like, you have to expose yourself to hard things to build up the confidence, to build up the skills, to build up the knowledge, so that when you, you know, face hard times later, you can be more confident and you can handle those things better. Steve, I know that's something that you and I have both done probably somewhat intentionally, but somewhat not, just because we're kind of out there doing stuff anyway, and those experiences just continue to build and build and build. But specifically, we wanted to talk about, you know, the context of doing activities, you know, maybe now, like maybe pre-hunting season. And this is, I think, especially important for you guys who are less experienced in backcountry hunting, maybe going on your first hunt, or maybe going on your first backpack hunt, or maybe you're going on your first 5 or 7 day hunt when you're used to just, you know, being a weekend warrior. But getting out there and doing something to kind of challenge yourself. And really, along the way in these events, you're not only testing your mindset, you're not only testing your physical preparedness. It's a great opportunity to test gear, to test nutrition, you know, your food strategy. And one thing that can be, I think, incredibly helpful is if you're considering maybe a new hunting partner, testing how that thing goes and how someone responds when crap hits the fan and when times get hard. So with all that said, kind of the two, I guess, stories or two kind of contexts that we'll look at tonight, two events that we can talk about, and there's many others, but we'll talk about the Exo Death Hike, which is something that you guys have done, what, 2 years now before this year,
yep.
Steve?
2 years? Yeah, 2 years, yep.
And going into the third year with that, and then I'll be joining you guys and suffering along with you, which I'm looking forward to. But then also something I did recently, which was a GORUCK event. I think the GORUCK event is not at all hunting specific. Like, it has essentially nothing to do with hunting. But it was something that I did just because I was interested in it. And I think it is an absolutely great way to prepare for kind of the physical, mental aspects of backcountry hunting. So GORUCK, if you guys aren't familiar with it, they're these events that happen all over the country. I think if you just go to GORUCK.com, you know, you can kind of find their schedule and their map. And they have sort of three different levels of their events. I think it's a light, a tough, and a heavy. And I did the tough, which is kind of the original event, and it's kind of like the mid-range event now. But it's 12 hours, give or take, sometimes up to 14. It's overnight, so we started at 9 p.m. and ended up going till almost 10 a.m. the next morning. You have to wear a pack the entire time. If you're over, I think it's 160 pounds, you have to have a 30-pound weight. And then if you're under 60, I think it's a 20-pound weight. And so you're hiking, you're rucking, as they call it, which is, you know, kind of a military term for hiking with weight. So you're rucking, you're doing a bunch of, like, PT along the way, a bunch of kind of like team challenge type stuff, and a bunch of stuff to just kind of not break you. Like, it isn't super hardcore. The events are run by military guys, but it's not boot camp. They're not jerks, but at the same time, they'll push you and you will test yourself and you will kind of find a challenge along the way for sure. So it was pretty cool because, you know, I took the Exo and was running this and wearing it, you know, 12, 13 hours straight with about a 35-pound load with food and water. So not a heavy load, but, you know, if you're covering a bunch of ground with weight on your back, it's definitely a great way to prepare for hunting. So you're not supposed to wear a watch because you're not supposed to even know what time it is as this thing goes through the night. You're not supposed to have a GPS or anything like that. But someone had a Fitbit. And anyway, long story short is we ended up doing, I think, 23 miles over the 12, 13 hours. And that was just, you know, the rucking time, the ground we covered. Along the way, we had to do some stuff like log PT. The funniest part, Steve, this is so weird. This was like the moment where I was like, what? Why did I sign up for this? What am I doing? So we had to hike from like the starting point, which was just some random park. And then we had to hike to this other park, and you have to move as a team and all that. You can't leave anyone behind, that whole philosophy. So it wasn't a crazy pace by any means, but anyway, we ended up covering about 8 miles after what they call the welcome party, which is like a bunch of PT, like squats and burpees and all kinds of, you know, plyometrics and stuff like that while you're wearing your weighted pack. So you get a little bit smoked right up front. And then we covered probably 6 or 7 miles, show up at this other park. It's who knows what time, 2 a.m. I have no idea. But middle of the night, nobody around. This park happened to be Riverside. So sure enough, along the way, he's like, all right, we're getting in the river. He's like, you can wear as much as or as little as you want. Because some people packed extra clothes knowing that they might get wet. Some people didn't. I essentially only had like extra socks with me. So it was like in the 40s or so, in the middle of, I have no idea where we're at, next to a river. And he has us getting into a river. And then we had to do this like PT stuff in the river. I had stripped on to essentially like just my boxers along with pretty much all the other guys. did all this crazy stuff in the river, and I'm thinking, what in the world are we doing? This is so odd. And so we did that, and then we get out, and he's like, you guys look wet, and you look cold. You better dry off. So he sends us down this trail, and he basically told us to run to this first intersection, which was, you know, maybe a mile, and then we had to come back. That was our means of warming up and drying off. So here we are. I'm running on a trail with a handful of strange men, side by side with some other wet dude we just got out of the river in our boxers, running to where we have no idea. And it was like, what in the world? So needless to say, this event was one of those things that it's just like, it shakes you up. It like shakes you up mentally. It'll certainly test you physically. But it was just one of these crazy examples of, because of what you go through in something like that, I think you're more capable of, like, when crap gets crazy in the backcountry, you're good. Like, if I get wet, like, if I fall in a creek, I've been wet before. I've been cold before. I've been in the middle of nowhere before. I've had to warm myself up before. You get a little bit turned around, or you get, you know, away from camp, and it's much later than you thought. Maybe you shot an animal near dark, and then now it's, like, 3 a.m. and you have to get back to camp. No big deal. I've done that before, right? So a go ruck is a kind of a crazy example of something you can do as sort of a preparation event. But because I had just done one, it was kind of fresh on the mind as a way to challenge yourself. So like I said, these things are happening kind of all over the country. If it's something that you guys want to check out, I think it's a cool thing to do, definitely an odd thing to do. Definitely something that when you tell your friends or family what you're doing, they're going to think you're absolutely insane, like mine did. I had so many friends, and especially a bunch of my buddies, their wives, like, overhear the story and be like, you did what? Why did you do that? So it was pretty interesting for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's so important to get outside your comfort zone, and don't, you know, especially if you're going on your first backcountry hunt, don't let that be getting outside your comfort zone. I remember, you know, I grew up in sports, very, you know, sport oriented family, you know, everybody was football, basketball, baseball, and kind of did that whole thing. And frankly, you know, when I got into hunting, I didn't really start taking it serious till I was 18, and I was a wuss, man. Like, I remember, like, this area we elk hunted, if we had to climb 1,000 feet, it was just like, I dreaded that, right? I mean, it was just like, son of a, we got to climb all the way up there just to get to the elk. You know, like, this sucks. I'd kind of like mope my way up there, huffing and puffing. And somewhere along on the way, I, you know, probably like early 20s is when I started getting into mountain biking. And then that evolved into racing. And I did competitive racing for quite a few years, and that probably more than anything taught me about just, it's like, it's okay. Everything's going to be okay, right? The sun's going to shine. It doesn't matter. Like, you could be miserable, absolutely miserable for a few hours. And after that, you sit down and rest, and it's not a big deal. You know, it just kind of taught you to have that mental toughness to, like you said, if you're cold and you're wet and you're tired and whatever, you know, the one thing I look at is like, I'm never more than 3-hour hike from the truck. Big whoop, yeah. Right? You know, I mean, that could get scary if you had a broken leg or something like that. But, you know, that's why we carry an in reach just in case something crazy happens. But for the most part, you know, just big deal. Suck it up. And, you know, but like you said, being in those situations and pushing your limit and stuff like that, it just makes that hunt that much more enjoyable. And for me, it's not even, it's about life, right? I mean, it's get out of just hunting. It's, you know, just having mental toughness and getting through obstacles. And, you know, not every day is going to be peachy. You know, sometimes you got to fight through it. So
yeah,
the more you push yourself and the more you go through those things, me personally, the more confidence I have that that whatever it is that's thrown at me, I'm going to survive, right? And, mm-hmm. and be there the next day. So
yeah, it's a great point. It's definitely about more than hunting. I think it's especially important to do these things to prepare for hunting, because our day-to-day life is so soft and so easy. So it's like hunt, like a backcountry hunt, which really isn't that big of a deal or shouldn't be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Feels like a big deal because we spend the other 350 days of the year, you know, driving through Starbucks, and the worst thing that happens is, you know, somebody cuts us off or whatever. Like, you know, everything around us is just so geared towards like ease and convenience that, I mean, it is really odd actually when you think about it, that somebody like me would pay $50 to go have someone make me suffer a little bit. Like that, that whole concept doesn't even make sense, because life is so easy these days that we actually have to actively go seek these things out, to go seek these challenges, to go build confidence, when, you know, a couple generations ago it was like life just smacked you and that's how you got tough. But these days it just, you know, it doesn't happen for most of us.
Yeah, for sure. I know, like for me personally, I grew up doing construction, like from high school all the way through college. I was doing all sorts of different types of construction, and you're out in the field all day long and working and lifting and doing this and that. And then when somewhere that evolved into, you know, working, basically my life turned to answering emails, and now I can go out in the yard and I like do yard work for a day and I'm sore the next day. And I'm just like, what happened? With me? This is pathetic, you know? So it's so important to get out there and just push yourself. And it's not easy, you know, heck, it's having a 6-month-old daughter right now. It makes it freaking 100 times harder to get out, but I'm still, in fact, I made myself commit to doing a mountain bike race this year just to kind of have that extra motivation. And like, you know, tonight, as soon as we get off this, I'm going to go get on my bike and go put in 20 miles. Yeah. So I think, these events, not only great for that, are great for your mental toughness, but just great for getting you off your butt. Cause it's so easy to have the excuse to just drink another beer or whatever. And I don't think, you know, you don't got to be, you know, a meathead, right? I mean, you don't got to be at the gym every single day. And frankly, I haven't set foot in a gym in 10 years. And it's probably why I'm sore doing yard work. But when it comes to hiking the mountains and running and stuff like that, the things that matter, I mean, an elk doesn't care how much you can bench press. Getting out there in the field, you know, it's important to be in shape.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, too, because I, you know, neither you nor I are into the whole, like, the meathead side of things.
Right.
Any of that. But the thing that's interesting is a lot of what's promoted, or at least, like, some of the loudest guys who are promoting fitness in the hunting industry, and I'm not talking even about, like, the celebrities. I'm talking about the guys, the everyday guys who are promoting stuff, or all into it. A lot of what they're doing is really non-functional for hunting. And that's one of the things I think is interesting about even doing these types of events, is these guys who are focused, like, you know, you mentioned bench press or whatever, these guys who are focused on doing that can realize that, yes, they may be working hard physically. Yes, they may be doing a lot in the gym. But maybe if they do one of these preseason events, they're going to realize that the way that they're preparing might be great for the beach, but it's not actually good for hunting. And so that's another thing, is whether you need one of these tests because you're inactive, or you want to do one of these tests specifically because you want to see if the training that you are doing is actually helping you or can actually be hurting you. Either way, I think it's a pretty good test.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We did a couple years ago, I guess, another example of one of these events, a little bit, again, I guess kind of more of an extreme one that most guys aren't going to run out and do before this season. But 2 years ago, I did a rim to rim hike, of the Grand Canyon. So it's, the route that we did was, we ended up doing 25, 26 miles. And then it's, I don't know, somewhere getting close to 13,000 feet in elevation change. I think it's 12,500, somewhere around there. Anyway, we just did that as a day hike. So, like, we started at the North Rim, hiked all the way to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, came out the South Rim. And so, for me, that was another one of these mini events of, like, all right, let's see where I'm at. Let's see how I'm in shape. Let's see how I can suffer, just knowing it's like, this will be over in 10 hours. This will be over in 12 hours. But that's the way it is, you know, when you pack out an elk or you have, you know, a super hard thing. It's like, this sucks in the moment, but I'll be done in 4 hours or 6 hours or what have you.
Yeah, I think that's it kind of just remind me of it, just like you have the confidence to know that it's going to end, right? This isn't, it's painful at this moment, but in 3 hours or 4 hours or 6 hours, whatever, it's going to end. And I think there, I've developed like a mental block to just kind of like shut out the pain. And I don't know if you've experienced that same thing, but you just kind of just put your mind elsewhere, right? Don't focus on how much your legs are throbbing or whatever, and just think about eating that delicious backstrap that's on in your backpack, or, you know, just start thinking about all the memories or whatever. Just I found myself doing that quite often, especially in a mountain bike race, because I've never had anything that even remotely competes with how painful that is. It's, you know, they're 2 to 3 hours long, and it's your heart rate's at max for the entire time. And you just put your mind elsewhere, and soon enough it'll be over and you'll be back home drinking a beer.
Yeah. Are there any specific things that you find yourself thinking about to sort of distract yourself from the pain of the moment?
You know, I think it's pretty random. I always get, it's funny, as Lenny and I always joke that like our most productive meetings ever are on a mountain bike, because we can just like, you kind of get on the bike and you start riding and you forget about all the crap, or my cell phone's turned off and it's in my pocket or whatever, and kind of have a clear mind. And that's usually when we come up with our best ideas. But yeah, I think I just let my mind wander to things I'm thinking about in life or whatever. You know, it's just anything but thinking about that, how heavy the pack is on your back and the next step, right? Just,
yeah.
You know, we always, one of my favorite things, as small as it is, and we made a really, you know, this is a habit of ours, is we have a 6-pack of beer in the truck with on ice, right? And it's like, that like last there. Couple of miles, you know, it's just like, oh man, can't wait to go get that beer, can't wait to go get that beer, you know. It's always like such a, you get there and drop a pack and first thing we do is go open the beer and, you know, kind of toast to a successful hunt, or even if we didn't kill something, toast to a great experience. So you know, that's just one of those little things we do, and I think that's there's a lot of those, you know, find a bunch of little things that you enjoy in a hunt to make them easier. You know, for me, it's coffee and hot cocoa, right? I'll mix those two up when I'm glassing in the evening, and that's something I look forward to. And kind of off topic there, but just find a few things that you can kind of like that give you a little bit of comfort of home or something like that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. So if you guys are hearing this and you're not going to fly to the Grand Canyon and you're not going to sign up for a Go Ruck and you're not going to join us on the death hike, no problem. Find something close, find something that you can do. You know, as we talked about, like it's getting to be go time. We're coming up on Memorial Day. It's time to prepare. It's time to get ready physically and mentally. You know, one of my things that I'm always doing, especially like June, July, August, leading into season, is, you know, obviously trying to spend time under a weighted pack, but specifically on the weekends, I'm trying to do that early in the morning. And part of that's just out of necessity, because I have, you know, a wife and two kids that want to see me on the weekends, and I want to see them on the weekends. But part of that is just because doing something early can suck. It's another challenge. So if you guys don't have like a crazy place to go or anything else, I would commit to doing every Saturday or every Sunday or at least every other, you know, week, doing one early, long, heavy hike. So for me, it's like getting up at 4 on a Saturday is the last thing that I want to do. But that's, you know, getting up when an elk's bugling before dark might not be what you want to do, or, you know, going and pushing that extra day when you're tired after the fifth day might not be what you want to do. So again, it's just in the preseason that you can kind of build the mental and physical toughness to do that. And again, if you don't have access to go do some big event, some trail run, some mountain bike race, a go ruck, whatever, just kind of commit to like every week, let's get up early and let's do something that's not comfortable. That's it. So let's
one thing that I do that helps me is I track every single hike and bike ride I do. I personally use an app called Strava, and it really helps as a gauge, and also I can compete against myself. And I think it's one thing to go hike and it's an entirely another thing to go hike or exercise with purpose. So like an example of like my mountain bike right now getting ready for this race, it's I have long days, I have sprint days, I have like steady kind of just pace days. And I think it's really important to do that, to make sure you're varying it up and also keeping track of it so that you have a measuring stick. And I'm sure most guys, you know, are like us, that you are competitive. And so when we're doing our, you know, we do these Tuesdays and Thursday hikes here in Boise, where a group of us get together at 6:30 in the morning, and some guys have 20 pounds, some guys have 80 pounds in their packs, but we go hike these trails. And every single one of those I record, and I know how much time it takes to get to the top. And so every week I'm competing against myself with, you know, I mark them with like Table Rock hike with 70 pounds. And so if I'm hiking with 70 pounds that day, I'll go back and look and like, okay, I was 30 seconds slower today, or I was a minute faster. And I think that's a good, at least it motivates me. And I'm sure that a lot of guys would be in the same boat to push harder and not just hike for the sake of hiking, but hike with purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can try and beat your pace. You can try and go longer than last time. You can try and go heavier than last time. There's all kinds of ways to scale that, but absolutely, that's a great point, that you should be not only tracking what you have done, but then trying to make progress. And again, just to be practical, don't kill yourself every week. As you said, Steve, like you have days that are more steady. You have days that are more of a sprint and an all-out effort. But, you know, as a general rule of thumb, like something I'll do with my hikes is try and increase weight like every week for 4 weeks, and then either step back or plateau for a week, and then kind of get back at it again. So there's all kinds of ways to do that. Again, whether that's going faster, going longer, or going heavier. If you're specifically looking at hiking, I mean, I think doing one of those three things is the way to do it. One thing as well for you guys who are, you know, in the Midwest or out East, and you're like, I have no good place to hike, no good place to get elevation. If you really want to do something that's dreadfully boring yet super effective, find a box or a bench or something, throw your pack on, and just do step ups. That's something that I do. So usually, you know, kind of preseason prep at the bare minimum, I'm doing one long and or heavy hike, and then one long session, again, under pack weight of step ups. And sometimes that's literally, I bought one of those cheap kind of clicker counters. And so for me, kind of like you were saying with Strava, with Strava tracking your distance, I will set a timer for 45 minutes and set, you know, say 40 or 50 pounds in my pack, and literally I'm clicking every step and going, can I get more steps than last time? But that kind of just doing that step up and down on a box or a bench, that's a good way if you're stuck in the flatland, to kind of get some, proper activation, of your muscles to prepare for the mountains.
Have you ever, out of curiosity, played with like one of those kind of balance balls, you know, where it's like a half moon, or a half ball
like
shape to really
Bosu ball or whatever.
Like that too. Cause one thing I've noticed, is hiking like, our Table Rock trail. It's a 4 or 5 foot wide, really nice trail.
Yeah. It's smooth.
It's smooth. There's a big difference between hiking that and hiking off trail. And as you're saying that, my mind doing the box steps, I would think something that's working more of those stabilizer muscles would make that, you know, exponentially more painful in a good way.
Yeah, I haven't done that. One thing I have done is in addition to doing loaded pack weight, is doing it with like dumbbells or kettlebells in my hands, either both hands or one of the hands. And believe it or not, just doing that throws your balance off enough as you're stepping and landing and coming up and down that you actually are stabilizing a whole lot. So your foot's landing flat for the most part, but because the weight, especially if you're doing like a weight in one side and switching it up, since the weight kind of wants to pull your balance off, you can really feel like in your lower leg and your ankle and kind of in those tendons working all those stabilizers. So that's one thing I have noticed. I am fortunate enough that, you know, even though I'm in Missouri and at 500 feet elevation, one of my local trails is actually incredibly rocky and has a couple good climbs on it. So I'll just, you know, go hit those climbs over and over and over. And it's a good kind of off trail to work all that stabilization stuff, but that is a great point. And especially if you're paving, pounding pavement, you know, can't get on any trail, that you be missing some of that sort of stabilization and that activation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's talk about the death hike. Partly to talk about it, partly because I want to pick your brain on it a little bit because you roped me into it. And partly, and I guess we'll start here, what are kind of some of the lessons that you've learned or that you've seen guys learn in the last couple of years doing this? Maybe some of the ways they went wrong, some of the challenges, just kind of anything that stands out from the last couple of years of doing this with, you know, with a group of guys.
Yeah, you know, the whole purpose of the death hike is everything that we've talked about here is to push yourself. And, you know, the death hike is 95% mental, right? I mean, because we're high. I mean, we're going to do 40 miles and 15,000 feet of elevation gain this year. So it's going to be tough, but it's not so much, you know, it's not the same type of pain as a 100-pound pack for 6 miles, right? It's, you know, you only got 20 pounds on the pack and you're just foot after, you know, just step after step after step for 40 miles. And we're going to do that in, you know, a 25-hour period or whatever it's going to take us.
And you still have that cold six-pack at the truck, right?
Yeah, you know, okay. Absolutely. Okay. probably a 24-pack for each guy.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I think it's a mental battle. You're going to have pain show up, right? Like for me, the first year, my left knee about halfway through I thought it was just going to explode at any step. You know, I was like all my weight bearing on a trekking pole, the whole downhill portion of that thing. And that was really, really painful. And luckily I didn't have any of that last year. So that sucked. And we had a few guys that happened to, like Russ Meyer last year, his knee was killing him. You know, other guys getting sick and heat exhaustion and all sorts of stuff. But again, it's, you know, it is all ties back to every single one of those guys is better off at the end of that than they were before they started it, you know? And just from a mental toughness and a confidence, and you just put yourself in, you know, probably, I mean, I think everyone last year had agreed that was, you know, the hardest hike they'd ever done, hands down. And it just gives you it just puts your confidence through the roof that, you know, when you're picking a spot for your elk grounds, it's 6 miles off the road and a 3,000 or 4,000 foot thing. It's the same thing as when you're sighting in your bow and you're shooting 100 yards, you feel like 20 or 30 is a chip shot that you can't miss.
Right.
So just that confidence that inspires in you. And you know, just pushing, it's just, you have to get out and push your boundaries. You're never going to grow as a person, if you don't push your boundaries. And that's, you know, not just physically, but mentally and in your personal life. Just, you know, get out and take some risks and do some things. And I think it just helps you grow as a person. But as far as lessons learned, I think the obvious ones are shoe selection for some guys. Unfortunately, there's no way to figure that out until you're halfway through it.
Yeah.
If you made the wrong choice or not.
What do you find guys tending to do? To do more of a lightweight shoe for that, since the pack load's lighter?
Last year, I want to say we were relatively 50-50. We had a couple guys who I told where to wear lightweight shoes because that's what I prefer.
And then they were cursing you?
Yeah, they were cursing me. They had some pretty good blisters. So I think, you know, it's just your, the structure of your foot and the bones and how you walk and your body weight and foot size. I mean, I think there's so many factors that come into play. So you just got to figure out what works best for you. But everyone had like a full on heavy boot, right? I mean, it was just like more of a hiking boot, like a 6-inch tall boot or, you know, I just had my Salomon X Ultras. So, and for me, they were awesome. I got a little blister on my heel the last like 3 miles where we were just climbing straight up. And, you know, I think, again, matching your socks to the boot is really important. I know I have a whole basket full of wool socks, and some of them kill me wearing Salomons. Not kill me, but bother me, and other ones I have no issues with. So it's important tip to, if you have find a boot that's comfortable and maybe your heel lifts or there's a little too much room in the foot box, you can definitely play with the thickness of your sock to kind of fine-tune that. The other one, the big one on the hike is nutrition. Mm-hmm. Staying hydrated, not getting dehydrated. It's hard. You get so tired and kind of delirious. It's pretty easy to like hike 4 or 5 miles with, and go like, oh man, I don't think I've taken a sip of water. You know, and that's definitely something I've put into practice on just my hunts, is just making sure I'm just drinking lots and lots and lots of water. And to be honest with you, I don't know if we necessarily have it dialed in perfectly, as far as, you know, what to take and what not to take. You know, last year, I know we, Lenny had packed so many like type pro bar type things that he just like, you know, he's battling heat sickness and exhaustion, and he's just like, he couldn't
just
even
didn't
fathom.
Sound good. Yeah.
Yeah. Just chugging one of those down his throat. So I, you know, it's a balance there of maybe you have some light foods that you can kind of go, but it definitely just keep drinking and keep eating and just keep that thing, you know, keep your body moving, as far as digesting that stuff and giving it the nutrients and hydration that it needs to keep going. What'd you do on your GORUCK event? I mean, obviously that's, you know, along the same lines, so not, you know, going to be about half as intense, but, yeah. What did you do?
Yeah. I mean, hydration's huge, I think. And part of that's weather dependent. So, you know, the GORUCK, it wasn't bad. I started with, a 3 liter or two or it was a 3 liter bladder, but it wasn't quite full. So between like 2 and 3 liters, and I just try to be really conscious about that. Was able to refill a bit way through. I didn't worry on that. I didn't worry about supplementing anything in my water, in terms of like electrolytes or salt or anything like that. But when I did the Grand Canyon hike, that was something that I did intentionally. You know, 'cause there's just a much greater extreme there. So like when we left the North Rim, for the Grand Canyon hike before sunrise, it was, I think, 36 or 38 degrees. But then you get down into the canyon and it's triple digits. So it's a, like a 60 degree jump in like the first half of your trip. And then hiking through, you know, the bottom of the canyon, the sun, just like when it gets down in there, there's just nothing but rock around. So it's kind of like an oven. And so doing that like through the, through midday and through afternoon is incredibly hot. And the, you know, this could be more along the lines of the death hike being in July, could be quite warm. And in those instances for me, supplementing with some electrolytes, with the water seems to help tremendously in terms of preventing cramping. And also just kind of, you know, if you get into it really scientifically about sort of doing the balancing within your chemistry essentially, but you know, that could be like those noon tabs or, goo, like the company that makes the goo gels. They also have like some tabs you can drop in your water that have electrolytes and things like that. So in terms of nutrition on the hydration side, that's what I look at. Again, if it's hotter, I'm looking more at those electrolytes just because I'm sweating more and losing more of that. And then food, you know, it kind of depends, again, for me somewhat on the weather, just because probably like when he was, if you get super hot and you're getting near like heat exhaustion type stuff, man, like some things just sound horrible, right? For me, one of my go-tos for sure is always like the honey stinger waffles. I can eat those in almost any condition. It seems like they're just freaking delicious and always sound good. Yeah. I try not to do, I used to, but I don't really do like the goos or the gels much anymore, just because that's one of those things where they just tend to not sound as good to me. But yeah, I mean, so kind of, you know, it's all over the place. I'm obviously much more intentional, like on a hunt, because I'm typically out there for a week, and so I have to be much more strategic versus something for the death hike. You know, I'll keep an eye on weight for sure, but at the same time, you don't have the same constraints of like planning a week's worth of nutrition as you do for, you know, 24 hours or what have you. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. But typically, yeah, it's a matter of, for me anyway, it's a matter of making sure I stay on top of that, because, you know, in experiences past, I've noticed that whether it's on the hydration side or on the eating side, if I get to the point where I'm super thirsty or super hungry and start to feel like crap, it's kind of too late at that point. Because probably kind of like you mentioned, Lenny was like, you get to that point and you kind of get nauseous or something, and at that point, nothing sounds good. So for me, it's a more, more a matter of just kind of staying fueled, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So with the death hike, just to kind of get into this, because, and part of the reason to get into this again is selfish, because this is my first time, and part of it is I'm hoping that there's guys hearing this, and not that they have to recreate the death hike, but it's going to give them information on, hey, let me grab a buddy or two or five, and let's go do some overnighter, or let's go do this A to B, or let's go do this big trail before season. So as you go into this, what's the strategy for you guys for pulling this off to keep packs light and only carry the essentials? Obviously, we're only talking about a single night. What are those essentials? Like, what are the big things that you're going to make sure and have?
Yeah, I mean, we're shooting for the low 20s. You know, I think I was, I don't remember, 18, 19 pounds, and most of the guys were like 23, 24 last year. Yeah, I mean, it's literally, because we do stay the night, everyone had a pad, a sleeping bag, and a bivy sack. Some guys, you know, didn't have a bivy sack. They grabbed a tarp, or Lenny just grabbed some Tyvek and basically rolled up in it. You know, just kind of improvise some type of thing just in case it rained that night, or you know, the ground you're sleeping on is mud or whatever. And then no stoves, you know, first aid kit, headlamp, spare batteries. This year we'll have, I'm going to make sure we'll have groups, and every group has to have at least one radio and one DeLorme inReach so we can communicate and stay safe. And water, you know, just the real basic stuff. Obviously lots of, you know, blister tape, extra, yeah, probably two pairs of extra socks. And then, you know, clothing wise, I don't think I just literally, you know, had some pants, one wool shirt, and like my first light puffy jacket. And that was it. Probably no beanie, no gloves, nothing like that stuff.
Yeah.
Cause it's not going to be, you know, it'll be mid 30s, 40 at night. And then, yeah, it's going to be July 7th. So it could be, easily be 100, you know, when we're in the bottom of the canyon. So,
yeah, just get up and get cruising and be moving. You won't be cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That's good. So, I know in years past that it's kind of been different, but do you go into this hike with like a certain goal for, we're going to get here day one, we're going to stop here, or do you just hike till you drop and find a place to crash that night? I mean, you've done that before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually both years I had predetermined camp spot, which was roughly halfway. So the first year we ended up like 3 miles short. We had started the first year, we had done like your GORUCK event. We had started hiking at 7 o'clock at night, and the goal was basically to hike until we couldn't, you know, keep our eyes open anymore, sleep for like 2 hours, and then hike the rest of the way out. I wanted people to be sleep deprived, you know, because it just added one more element to making this that much harder.
Of the death hike.
Yeah. And then last year, we started hiking at like 10 a.m. and I knew the route was going to be harder. So like, all right, so to kind of concede a little bit, we'll sleep for 8 hours, you know, like get to a point. But what ended up happening last year is we thought we were going to get to what was called Chicken Peak at like 8 o'clock, and we got there at midnight. You know, we were running 4 hours behind schedule. And so that was, you know, just took us a lot longer to get there. We were just moving slower than we had thought. And then so we got like 6 hours, you know, slept from midnight to 6 a.m. I think we were hiking shortly after six.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, I've got a predetermined lake. And this year, the group size has gotten quite a bit bigger. I think we have 24 guys. And I know we're going to get separate out into groups just naturally. And just with that group size, it's just going to happen. And so we'll just have this lake that's, you know, get there at 8 p.m. or 3 a.m. You know, that's the meeting point. So people, if you're going slow or pain or have pain or whatever, you got to get there to catch back up with everybody. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
What do you, I mean, again, it's going to vary, right? Especially with a group this big, and there's probably going to be some splitting, but kind of in general, what kind of pace are you guesstimating that you're covering? I don't mean you personally, but the group
right,
is kind
yeah,
of just
I mean, as a group, I figure in 3 miles per hour.
Okay.
That's actually hiking probably 3.5, right?
Yeah.
Because that's with stopping and, you know, filling up water and, you know, eating a snack or whatever. So yep. We're doing this year to kind of control it, to make sure that everybody's going, is ready for it. We're doing a test hike, which you luckily get to get out of being in Missouri, but I'm not worried about you. So we're doing a test hike, and that's it's the 10 miles. You climb just over 3,000 feet, and we're going to have to average like 3.2 up the climb with, you know, a 25-pound pack on. So that's, you know, not stopping once, just steady pace all the way up. And, you know, 3.2, it's a good pace. It's not
sprinting. I mean,
it's not sprinting, but it's, you know, it's definitely faster than you probably naturally just kind of hike a trail. So,
yeah. It's not leisurely.
for sure. So, I just pulled up the gear list I had created last year, and number one was monkey butt powder.
Nice.
That was definitely the theme of year one.
Red and bold. Yes.
Everybody was had a few issues in that department, and last year we brought bottles of that stuff, and it saved everybody's butt. So, obviously your pack and a bladder and a bivy sack, sleeping bag, sleeping pad, headlamp, water filter, TP, wipes, first aid kit, Tylenol PM, Aleve. One thing I'm working with Tyler Boschma is he's putting together a med kit that every group will have this year with just like the, you know, running all the rattlesnakes and crap last year. We're going this year. There's going to be some too. So we have snake bite kit and a few other more kind of heavy duty first aid stuff just to make sure everyone's taken care of. So trekking poles, extra socks, duct tape, leuco tape. I just had a knife on there. Oh, mosquito spray. Mosquitoes can get pretty bad. And then food. That's basically it. So
yeah. That's cool. So as you guys hear that, there's a list of gear. You can kind of, you maybe look in your area and try and figure out a good section to go hike and kind of, again, push it. Look for that. Let's average 3 hours or 3 miles an hour, and that includes your stop. So your pace is going to be above that. But hopefully that'll give you guys some information and maybe putting together your own death hike or your own little adventure, your own test, whether you're going to do that solo or, you know, do it with your hunting partner, or just get some crazy buddies together and go do it. When I did the Grand Canyon, I roped a buddy of mine into doing it with me, and he's not a hunter or anything like that, and he'd never done anything like that. And, it's fun. It's fun to get guys out there, and it kind of, again, going back to the fact that most of us are living a pretty easy life. Going to hike through the whole Grand Canyon straight through is going to be a little shock to the system, right?
Yeah. I can't reiterate enough. I just highly encourage people to just find some goal, whether that's a GORUCK event or make your own death hike or whatever, and just get out and do it. You know, it's so easy to make excuses and not do it and say you don't have the time. But I find myself just a much better person in general, right, when I have these things and I'm training for them and my energy's better. You get that sense of fulfillment. Like, right, I mean, you created a goal, you set out, and you freaking did it. You know, you made no excuses. And I can't encourage people enough to go pick things like that, because it's just going to make you better.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. It's a good way to wrap it up. If you guys do get out there and do anything, we would love to see it. So, tag us on social media, shoot us an email. We would love to hear what kind of adventures you guys put together in the next few months to prepare for hunting season. We would absolutely love to hear about that. So be sure and let us know, maybe shoot us some pictures, things like that, and we'll probably be able to share some of those in the future. That would be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing you mentioned on the gear list, Steve, was headlamps, which reminded me about a couple things we have going on.
Yeah.
My wife just said, because I just got a headlamp in the mail today, and she was like, haven't you gotten like 4 or 5 headlamps in the mail this week? I was like, I have. And then we went camping last weekend, and I was kind of throwing gear together, and she's like, how many stoves are you bringing on this camping trip? So, needless to say, we've posted this about this on social as well, at least about the stoves, but Steve and I are going to be testing a handful of headlamps and a handful of stoves and probably moving into some other gear categories, but we're going to be doing, you know, kind of side-by-side tests and really just kind of given our feedback. Not only will we kind of bring all the data together in terms of, you know, boil time on stoves or battery runtime on headlamps, but we're going to kind of get back together, each of us, with our own experiences and talk about what we did and didn't like across a whole bunch of models. And that'll be on the podcast. So we'll have like an episode just all about talking about headlamps. We'll have an episode talking about stoves. And again, we'll probably move into some other gear categories, but those will be coming, you know, this summer as we do our testing and, you know, hopefully in time for you guys to make some purchasing decisions if you're in the market for upgrading a stove or a headlamp or anything like that. Yeah. Bring that up now so that you can let us know if there's any particular tests you want to see, you know, that you haven't seen from other places, any particular models of stoves or headlamps that you want to see. Go ahead and reach out to us. Let us know. You know, we'll be testing 5 or 6 headlamps, 5 or 6 stoves for sure. Have already started testing some of the stoves and, like I said, getting a headlamp in the mail, it seems like, every day this week. So it should be cool. Definitely let us know anything you guys want to see out of those tests and that.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this. It's one of those, I think I came up with this idea on a bike ride where I was thinking about, you know, Jason and I had done that spine scope review, and it was just, there's physically no way to, like, decipher if a Leica is better than a Sworo, that's better than a Zeiss, that's better than a Vortex, if you don't just have them side by side. I mean, because it's just side by side, it's really, really hard to decipher what's better. And so I was just like, man, it'd be really cool. I got inspired partially by our Building a Backcountry Rifle series, so that let's tie this into building a, you know, the contents of a backcountry pack series, and then let's go do some really in-depth gear reviews. And you know, headlamps is a great one because you just see so many companies posting certain lumens brightness and battery runtime, and you know, I think so much of that is there's so much gray area out there that you don't know what's what, and you know, stoves on boil time and fuel efficiency and all sorts of stuff. So it's gonna be fun to do this. Like I said, I've been, every day is like Christmas at the office. Tyler just dropped off a couple headlamps, just got that Soto stove the other day, and I've got like 5 stoves set out on my desk at the office. I've already been testing boil times and measuring the grams of fuel for fuel efficiency on how much fuel it's using. And and then the headlamps I got when I went bear hunting Monday night, I took 3 of them with me and I was testing them all. It was the bike ride coming out, you know, it's pitch black and I'm going downhill. And so I had like 2 headlamps strapped to the handlebars and 1 on my head. So I was using all 3 and my path was well lit, that's for sure. But I definitely, out of those 3, I'm not going to say which one at the moment, but I had a clear winner that night of, wow, like, okay, this one's clearly performing better than the other 2. So
And there's more showing up.
Yeah, and there's more showing up. So it's going to be a lot of fun to do this and just give guys really good, you know, I think we can give a, like, okay, if you're on a budget, this is your best one. If you're looking for the best performance, this is the best one for you. So, it's going to be fun process to go through.
Yeah, our goal, I don't think, is by any means to like get 6 headlamps and then say this one's the best headlamp on the market. Our goal is to like highlight, like, you know, these are the positives, these are the pros and cons. If you want this, buy that. If you want, you know, like, if the max brightness matters to you, then go for that. If something that's easy to use matters for you, then go for that. And plus, you know, part of what's cool is, you know, so much research you do online, and I'm a kind of a researcher with any purchase by nature. So I could take a headlamp and look at, you know, max lumens, max runtime, all different features, etc. But part of what you miss in looking at those things is kind of the user experience. So like a headlamp could be super bright and have a great battery life, but it just feels cheap, or, you know, it turns on too easily and doesn't have a lockout feature, or, you know, all different types of things, right? And so by both of us getting our hands on these products and then both of us coming back and talking about our experiences, you know, you can go Google the specs of these items on your own, but you're going to get more feedback of like, no, we really had these in the field and tested them side by side. And then, you know, here's some of the actual things to look out for. Here's some things we actually like beyond, you know, the marketing materials and beyond the specs that you see when, you know, you visit a website.
Yep. So for sure.
It'll be fun. So guys, shoot us an email, podcast@exomountgear.com, specifically on the headlamps or stoves. And I'm sure we'll probably along the way get into doing some other comparisons. But just let us know what you want to hear. For sure. Anything else on this episode, Steve?
Nope. Get out there and push yourself. That's all awesome. I got to say.
Yeah. And tell us about that, too. We'd love to see your guys' adventures. So, again, just shoot us an email, podcast@exomountaingear.com. As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you're digging the show, subscribe, come back, leave a review in iTunes, anything like that. It helps us out tremendously. And we'll catch you guys next week.